Hare Krishna. Good evening. How are you all? Nice to see you here. I got a text message, something about clerical work. My wife's a supervisor for the Timberlawn. It's a mental health hospital. But I can talk to her for you. Probably just have to do an online application, but I can have her put in a good word for you. Okay. All right, let's see what Kumkumangi can do for you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, tonight, okay, thanks. You're on television when you're in here. See the camera? You're on television when you're in here. Yeah, my mom likes to watch sometimes. Hi, Mom. But you can see us on a line from Mayapur.tv. Mayapur is our international headquarters. Right now we're constructing a beautiful Vedic planetarium there. It's one of the largest structures on the planet, the third largest building in the world. And Prabhupada, our founder, he had an axiom. He said that religion without a scientific basis, without a scientific process to realize the soul in God, is simply sentimentalism. And science without an absolute truth, without an ultimate reality, is simply mental speculation. Like when they asked Prabhupada about Darwin's theory, Prabhupada said, "Your forefathers may have been monkeys, but mine were not." But he wanted to show that this literature actually gives a scientific basis for the origin of life, the creation of the universe. So he laid the cornerstone for this beautiful project. You can see it online. It's at tovp.org, Temple of Vedic Planetarium. It's a beautiful, beautiful architectural structure and college. It's being built. Yeah. But that website, particular center is our international headquarters, and they have a live television that links to all the different temples. You want to say, to all the different temples around the world. That's Mayapur.tv. Mayapur, M-A-Y-A-P-U-R. But you can see live, you know, like festivals and lectures and, like, see right now, if you go on there right now, it's the morning in India. So catch like the whole morning program in India with lecture and kirtan, and it's really nice. It's really nice. Are you a musician?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. What instrument do you play? You play more than guitar, it sounds like. Harmonium?
Yeah.
This? You're playing around with it, huh? Well, that's great. Yeah, there's a few really accomplished musicians in our movement. Probably the most famous, he was rated the number one guitarist of Europe. His name's Krishna Prema. His professional name is Tofani, T-O-F-A-N-I. He's Italian. He builds his own guitars, like the last guitar he built. It's a 12-string acoustic with a 40-string harp built into the guitar. So he plays the acoustic and he plays the harp simultaneously. But he's very accomplished. He tours sometimes. And he was best friends with, this is probably a little early for you. His name's John McLaughlin. He had a band called Mahavishnu Orchestra. But they were the pioneers of electronic music. John McLaughlin and the Mahavishnu Orchestra. Have you ever heard of L. D. Meola? L. D. Meola, John McLaughlin, and Jeff Beck, and there was a man from this neighborhood. His name is Stevie Ray Vaughan. His brother performs at Fair Park sometimes. They donated a school nearby here. My son went to it for performing arts, but they were like considered to be the best guitarists in the world, and he's like in that category. He plays with them. When I was a kid, I used to live nearby a club, and I used to walk by this club, and there was a famous blues artist named Muddy Waters. He used to perform in there, and he used to give us guitar lessons when we were kids. Yeah, he taught me how to play some blues riffs and stuff. Yeah, and one of my friends, actually he came here to, not Muddy Waters, but one of my friends took regular guitar lessons, like every week for years, from B.B. King. B.B. King eats. He came. He's come here before to eat. But yeah, I guess those days were a lot different then. You know, people were more like family oriented and open, kind of. You know, because like we would just come by this club. You know, there was nobody drinking in there at that time, and there was a small stage. It was just like maybe whatever 2 feet off the ground. And he would just sit there and play. So we came by one day and we saw him in there and we started talking to him, you know, and then we found out that he was Muddy Waters. Cause you know, what did we know? We just saw him playing guitar. We were like, you know, early teens. One of my friends, his dad was a trumpet player for Duke Ellington's band. You ever heard of Duke Ellington? Duke Ellington was one of the most famous, they're like, hi Christian, good evening. They were called big bands. They have like, they're not orchestras, but they're not, like what we're used to seeing in a band. They have like a wind section, a string section, you know, saxophones. If you look online for big bands, they were really popular for dancing. Like all these big casinos and famous clubs would have big bands. Probably what would be the best example of that nowadays probably would be the band that plays for like Saturday Night Live. That's like in the big band category kind of thing, you know? So Duke Ellington, he had one of the most famous big bands. There are probably like 25 guys in there, you know, playing. And my friend's dad played for Duke Ellington. He played trumpet. And then he taught my friend's older brother how to play like 7 different instruments. Like he could play trumpet, he could play guitar, he could play drums, bass, piano, you know, saxophone, clarinet, you know, because once you get the basics down and then you're able, like, I think today people are, it's easier for them to play music too because we're a lot more keyboard oriented, typing, and the typing techniques are what allow you to play the instrument, you know, pretty much. So, yeah, so then he learned 7 instruments from his dad, and then he taught my friend how to play like double bass snare. You know, like a drum set, but instead of one bass drum, you have 2 bass drums. Have you ever seen that? It's really nice. Oh, it gives you a lot more of, what should I say? It gives you a lot more drive. You know, it creates a more of a feeling to dance when you have a double bass. And rather than just one drum kind of pounding, it's like boom, ba ba boom, boom, ba ba boom. You know, you can do more like bass rolls. But you know, if you look, for example, right now at UT in Austin, our line, this spiritual line, there were many famous musicians in our line. But Lord Chaitanya, are you all familiar with Lord Chaitanya? So there's a beautiful historical book. It's called Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm holding one copy of it. It's 9 volumes. And the Vedic literature has like an undergraduate, graduate, postgraduate level. And in Sanskrit, it's known as Sambandha Abhidaya and Prayochana. So Bhagavad Gita, Hare Krishna Manji, Hare Krishna Purusa. Bhagavad Gita is written on the level of Sambandha. Sambandha means it's like an undergraduate level for spirituality, but it basically means to realize our spiritual identity, to understand who the personality of Godhead is and what our relationship is with Krishna or with the Supreme. Then higher than that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Each morning we have a lecture in that. And it's like a 18-volume set like this. And it's more or less an encyclopedia on the spiritual culture of India. And it gives you living examples of people that had achieved perfection in spiritual life, who had become completely self-satisfied and who got free from the modes of nature. But then higher than that is this Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's written on the level of Prayochana. Prayochana means when all of our actions of our body, mind, and words are completely impelled by spontaneous feelings of love for Radha and Krishna. And that's considered to be the normal condition of our heart of hearts. Like within the deepest core of our existence, that's the actual nature of our living being. So, Anyway, the music tradition. See, this culture, it's based on music. And the Lord Chaitanya, he has a secretary. His name is Sarup Damodar Goswami. But since you guys got to go, I see you're impatient. Yeah. Hey, look, I'll leave you one thing. Sarup Damodar Goswami, he wrote a whole system of classical music. They said he could sing like an angel, and he was a great musician. But that is taught at UT in Austin right now. You can take a course on the classical music of Sarup Damodar Goswami. In fact, one devotee went there, and he learned how to play this mridanga drum in that course. But there's a few places in India that do that. But what the all of this music, this musical tradition, it's meant to invoke the different feelings of that we have. According to the Bharatanatya Shastra, there's 196 different emotions, and according to that classical music, there's 196 different types of they're called ragas. So anyway, I'll let you guys go. Sorry you have to leave. Okay, have a good night. I'll check with my wife on that clerical position. See what she can do. You're welcome. What's that? No, relax. No problem. I'll see you guys later on. Hare Krishna. Okay, so tonight I'm going to be reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. We're in chapter 10. This chapter is entitled Knowledge of the Absolute. And here Krishna is describing himself. This is very unique that the Supreme Lord would actually describe himself. And here it says, Shri Bhagavan Vacha Hantate Katayashyami Divya Yatma Vibhutaya Pradana Yata Kuru Shrishta Nashtyanto Vishtarashyame. The Supreme Personality of God had said, yes, I will tell you of my splendorous manifestations, but only of those which are prominent, O Arjuna, for my opulence is limitless. I am the super soul, Arjuna, seated in the hearts of all living entities. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all living beings. Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. Of lights, I am the radiant sun. Of the Marutas, I am Marichi. And among the stars, I am the moon. Of the Vedas, I am the Samaveda. Of the demigods, I am Indra, the king of heaven. Of the senses, I am the mind. And in all living beings, I am the living force, consciousness. Of the Rudras, I am Lord Shiva. Of the Yakshas and Rakshasas, I am the Lord of wealth, Kuvera. Of the Vasus, I am fire, Agni. And of the mountains, I am Meru. Of priests, O Arjuna, know me to be the chief, Brihaspati. Of generals, I am Kartikeya. Of bodies of water, I am the ocean. Of the great sages, I am Bhrigu. Of vibrations, I am the transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy name, Japa. And of immovable things, I am the Himalayas. Of trees, I am the banyan tree. And of sages, among the demigods, I am Narda. Of the Gandharvas, I am Chittaratha. And among perfected beings, I am the sage, Kapil. Of horses, know me to be Uchayashrava, produced during the churning of the ocean of nectar. Of lordly elephants, I am Aravata, and among men, I am the monarch. Of weapons, I am the thunderbolt. Among cows, I am the Sarabi. Of causes for procreation, I am Kandharpa, the god of love. And of serpents, I am Vasuki. Of the many-hooded Nagas, I am Ananta. And among the aquatics, I am the demigod Varuna. Of departed ancestors, I am Aryama. And among the dispensers of law, I am Yama, the lord of death. Among the Daitya demons, I am the devoted Prahlad. Among subduers I am time. Among beasts I am the lion. And among birds I am Garuda. Of purifiers I am the wind. Of the wielders of weapons I am Ram. Of fishes I am the shark. And of flowing rivers I am the Ganges. Of all creations I am the beginning and the end and also the middle. O Arjuna, of all sciences I am the spiritual science of the self. And among logicians, I am the conclusive truth. Of letters, I am the letter A. And among compounded words, I am the dual compound. I am also inexhaustible time. And of creators, I am Brahma. I am all devouring death. And I am the generating principle of all things yet to be. Among women, I am fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience. Of the hymns, I am the Samaveda, and I am the Brihat Sama, and of poetry, I am the Gayatri, of months, I am Magar Shirsha. I'm sorry, Marga Shirsha, November and December, and of seasons, I am the flower-bearing spring. I am also the gambling of cheats, and I am the splendid of the splendor. I am victory, I am adventure, I am the strength of the strong. I am the descendants of Rishni, I am Vasudev, and of the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. Of the sages, I am Vyas, and among great thinkers, I am Ushana. Among all means of suppressing lawlessness, I am punishment. And of those who seek victory, I am morality. Of secret things, I am silence. And of the wise, I am the wisdom. Furthermore, O Arjuna, I am the generating seed of all existences. There is no being, moving or non-moving, that can exist without me. O mighty conqueror of enemies, there is no end to my divine manifestations. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. Know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire creation. Beautiful. Krishna is amazing. So here, I'm going back to where Krishna began speaking. Here it is. The point that's being made is that it's not possible to comprehend the greatness of Krishna or his opulences. So there's a term in Sanskrit, it's achinta shakti. Yes, we can understand many things, but it is not possible to fully understand God. We have to accept that there are things that are beyond our capability to reason or to perceive. That's called achinta shakti. The senses of the individual soul are limited and do not permit him to understand the totality of Krishna's affairs. Do you know everything, Mishra Prabhu? Prabhupada was once asked that. Prabhupada was once asked, do you know everything? Okay, then how many particles of hydrogen make up the ocean? How many particles of dust are insidiously falling within the air in the city of Dallas? How many? How many living subatomic particles make up your brain? So we have to accept that there are things that are beyond our capability to understand. even if we research them, we cannot understand how many strings of hair are in Rasa Leela's head. Even if you count every piece of hair on Rasa Leela's head, it may take you years to do that. I don't think you could actually come to the proper conclusion. So here, Prabhupada's pointing out that it is not possible to comprehend the greatness of Krishna. He's saying here that the senses of the individual soul are limited. They make mistakes. We are illusioned by our senses. And we have a cheating propensity. Just like you may have noticed this, I take my wife out shopping sometimes, Rasa Leela. Have you ever noticed how everything in the city of Dallas is on sale? But beyond these four limitations and defects, here Prabhupada's pointing out that the senses of the individual soul are limited and do not permit him to understand the totality of Krishna's affairs. Still, the devotees try to understand Krishna, but not on the principle that they will be able to understand Krishna fully at any specific time or in any state of life. Just like it's described that Krishna is unlimited. Do you know that verse? What word in Sanskrit means unlimited? Ananta. Ananta means unlimited. So, Krishna, it's described that Krishna, everything about Krishna is increasing at every moment. His happiness is increasing, his knowledge is increasing, his love is increasing, his strength is increasing, his expansions are increasing. His renunciation is increasing. Imagine Lord Chaitanya. He's the Lord of Dwarka. 16,108 palaces made of gold, filled with jewels. It's described that when Arjuna married Draupadi, Krishna sent a gift, a wedding gift, to the Pandavas and Draupadi that comprised 1,000 bullock carts filled with gold bricks, 2,000 bullock carts filled with pearls, 3,000 bullock carts filled with emeralds, 4,000 bullock carts filled with rubies, 5,000 bullock carts filled with diamonds, and a whole retinue of soldiers and elephants and chariots made of gold. That was just a gift that Krishna sent. And yet that same Lord of unlimited opulence, he can renounce everything and sit in Navadvip as a completely impoverished and simple sannyasi, chanting the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, and be completely satisfied. How is that possible? How can someone with so much be satisfied with nothing? That is the opulence of God. So, here it's described that rather, the very topics of Krishna are so relishable that they appear to the devotees as nectar. Thus, the devotees enjoy them. In discussing Krishna's opulences and his diverse energies, the pure devotees take transcendental pleasure. Therefore, they want to hear and discuss them. Krishna knows that living entities do not understand the extent of his opulences. He therefore agrees to state only the principal manifestations of his energies. There's a beautiful verse. Let me see if I can remember. It goes, Satam Prasangam. What is it? Satam Mama Virya Sambhido Bhavanti Hritkarna Rasanayana Kata Tajoshanad Ashvad Pavagavartmani. Oh, what's the last line? Tajoshanad Ashvad Pavagavartmani. The translation is the powerful message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or of Krishna's glories, the powerful and spiritual message. Oh, let's just look at it. Here, I have the book right here. The powerful message of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the powerful message, the powerful spiritual message of Krishna consciousness can only be properly understood in the company of devotees, in the association of devotees. And it is greatly relishable in such association. By regularly hearing and discussing Krishna consciousness, one gradually develops a taste in spiritual life that transforms into attachment and then spontaneous love. I'm paraphrasing it, but that's pretty close. And here Prabhupada's saying the same thing. He's pointing out that the word pradanyata, principle, is very important because we can understand only a few of the principal details of the Supreme Lord, for his features are unlimited. And this is possible only in the association of devotees. It says it is not possible to understand all of them. And vibhuti, as used in this verse, refers to the opulences by which he controls the whole manifestation. In the Amara Kosh dictionary, it is stated that vibhuti indicates an exceptional opulence. Can you give an example about how Krishna controls the whole manifestation? Through Anantishesha, he manifests himself as gravity. And gravity is controlling the entire manifestation. Just like right now, it's saying that modern science has stated that we are traveling at the speed of 1,628 miles per hour through space in an orbit around the sun. It's pretty smooth, isn't it? Smoother than my car. Can you believe that we're traveling at 1,600 miles per hour right now? No, we're talking about modern science. Forget the Bhagavatam for a minute. Modern science is describing we're flying through space at the speed of 1,628 miles per hour. What it's stating now, Ravindra Saruprabhu and a whole team of scientists, and actually, if you go on YouTube, you can research this topic in detail right now. It's also being featured on history.com. But there are many lectures by Saraputa Prabhu. They're amazing, and he gives you an explanation of the entire universe. And what's really cool is there's actually these cosmic freeways that go from planetary system to planetary system. And you can access them via the rays of the sun. It's a really interesting scientific description. It's actually a science that's used by powerful yogis and demigods by which they can transport themselves to different places in the universe via these cosmic highways. But beyond that, regardless, you know, this planet is hurtling through space. They're saying that whatever its speed may be, yes, the sun is also moving. Yes, so many things are moving. It seems everyone is moving. But the point that I'm making is that these planets are flying through space. It said that if we moved 1 inch closer to the sun, we would burn alive. Or if the orbit of this planet was altered by 1 inch outside of its normal orbit, we would freeze to death. So, regardless whether you believe in Vedic science or Western science or just if you believe in yourself, the point is that there are so many things that are going on that prove that there must be some type of intelligent controller that's guiding everything. Western science, they are purporting that there is no controller. The result of their analysis and their theories is simply chaos. Because when a person comes to understand that they are not in control, and if they claim and believe that there is no God in control, then the natural, you know, conclusion of their theory is that everything is out of control. And if you live in an environment which is completely out of control, that is a state of total anxiety and fearfulness. And that's the result of modern, you know, so-called cosmic, you know, theories that are simply leaving people bewildered and filled with so much anxiety. Americans are so, you know, ridden with mental disease that it's come to the point where Americans are spending $4 trillion a year on beer to sedate themselves. Another $400 billion on wine. Another $500 billion on whiskey. And according to their analysis of rolling papers, because nobody rolls cigarettes, they're just rolling marijuana, they're saying that Americans smoke at an average of 3,000 tons of marijuana per week. Add that together with, you know, gross, you know, violence and sexual, you know, prolific, you know, high definition experiences, not only on television and in theaters, but right in their own pocket, in their phone. Practically, this so-called Western civilization is driving itself insane. And the whole world is following in the name of economic development. People have come to the point where they've become so mad that even leading members of, you know, medical institutions and psychiatrists and all different types of leading educational, you know, institutions, they make wild claims and that are not at all, you know, substantiated. Just like not too long ago, a leading psychiatrist in London, addressing the economic difficulties of the country, of Britain, he has is encouraging the senior citizens of Great Britain in the mood of being good sports to enter into a voluntary program of liquidation. What his point was is that older people, realizing that they're no longer productive members of society and basically had been reduced down to, you know, irrational and demented members and parasites of their own families, should allow themselves to be voluntarily killed. I mean, look at, if you look at it carefully, I mean, already all of the different governments in modern society have approved abortion. It's gotten to the point now where there are over 60 million reported abortions worldwide per year. That's more fatalities than all of the world wars combined together. Even they're going so far as to create political platforms for full-term abortion, where the woman's child could actually be just before delivery that could allow the abortion to take place. Over 60 million abortions worldwide. So the question arises then, who's more dear to you, your child or your parent? Well, the natural response to that question generally is that one's child is more dear than their parent. So if we're already, as an international community, approving of our governments to institute the annihilation of 60 million infant children each year, what's the next step? The next step is to approve a policy where your parent can be killed. Your useless and, you know, demented parent, who's nothing more than a parasite to you and your family and to society. You could, you know, yeah, I mean, you could visualize it. You know, here's your parent. They've been in a nursing home. They don't even know who they are. You're spending $120,000 a year to keep your parent alive in this nursing home. And then the administrator says, "Sir, I hate to tell you this, but the government has just passed a policy that allows for your parent to be put to sleep in euthanasia. And for the nominal service fee of $5,000, our institute can provide this facility for you and your family. I know this is a very difficult decision for you, but remember, that money, that $120,000 a year that you're spending for your parent, who doesn't even know who you are, could be used to benefit your children, your wife, and this country. Think about it carefully. And call me. I'm here for you." Or we're seeing literature coming out such as 1001 ways how to commit suicide. For example, people are so distressed, they're so disturbed, especially in the so-called progressive and economically progressive societies like in Japan. There are more suicides in Japan than any other country in the world. Their education system for children is so demanding that if a child isn't in the top 10% of their graduating class, they're not allowed to go to any major university. And it drives many of them to suicide. Or, even amongst the elementary school students, they have an electronic gate system on the schools. So, if the child comes late to school, the gate will electronically lock, and the child will have to go home and fail that day's classes. When I was in Asia, there was one child. The child was running late to school, and the child tried to get inside as the gate was closing, and the gate crushed the child to death. And it came out in the newspaper that the parents were so irresponsible to send their child to school late. So, in a so-called economically developed, you know, in progressive society like in Japan, young children can even be crushed alive if they're late to school, and this is considered normal. So these descriptions from Bhagavad Gita, they're meant to give us relief from this horrible, you know, self-centered and vicious society, which is basically a useless attempt to create a stable situation in a world which is diametrically opposed secure, being secure. Every single one of us is being threatened by non-existence at every moment. You can walk out of the temple room and slip on a banana peel and crack your head. It's amazing every time I drive by these billboards and it says, you know, drive safely, already 2,476 people have been killed on Texas highways this year. But we're never thinking like that, that we're going to be the next one that's going to be killed. We're thinking, no, let me make an arrangement to make my life secure here. I'll do everything. But that is completely ignorant. There is no possible way to create a secure situation in the material world. It does not exist. That is insane. And yet, somehow, that type of insanity has been accepted as the greatest form of intelligence. You must have a secure life. You must do everything to be secure. You must have sufficient amount of money for security. You must have insurance for security. You must have an education for your security. You must live in a secure neighborhood. You have to have a security system. You need a gun for security. Practically everything that's going on in the name of intelligent behavior is simply to create a secure position in the material world. That is madness. And yet when we talk like this, people think that we're crazy. Prabhupada once wrote a book called Who's Crazy? Even children, they're dying from cancer. Where is the security? Even right on this block, how many people have we seen die? Since I've been here in 30 years, I've seen 10 devotees die. Right in front of me. Right on this block. So Krishna, he's, you know, he's encouraging us to give up this futile pursuit. Give up trying to make a permanent arrangement in a temporary place. Just like, for example, everybody's taken an airlines flight. So you can imagine, right? You're in the transit lounge of the airport. And, you know, your flight's going to come in a couple hours. But in the meantime, you start building your home in the transit lounge of the airport. You know, you start concreting bricks together. And somebody asks, what are you doing? I'm building a house here. But your flight comes in a few minutes. This is the transit lounge of the airport. No, that doesn't matter. I need to live somewhere. I need to live here. So that's like our situation. We're building, we're putting so much importance, so much time and effort in making, you know, a so-called secure arrangement in this temporary transit lounge of the material world. And what Krishna is saying is that there's no happiness in that. Yeah, you get some sense of accomplishment. Okay, I've got this house, I've got this car, I have money in the bank. So what? It doesn't make you happy. So Krishna's saying we have to take our minds off of this useless pursuit and try to understand how wonderful Krishna is. There's a chapter in Krishna book, Prabhupada named it Wonderful Krishna. Now, one might say, well, these descriptions of the mountains and of the oceans and of the birds and of all these different things, it's very impersonal. So how are we to actually see Krishna in all of these things? So the example it's given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is just like when somebody is given that when someone loves another person, when they see something, a possession of that person, they don't actually see the person. I mean, they don't actually see the possession, they see the person. Like, I'll give an example. Like, I really loved my grandfather. He used to do so many nice and loving things for me. So when he passed away, whenever I would see any of his possessions, I didn't really see the possession, I would think about my grandfather. So in the same way, when we develop our love for Krishna, then whatever we see in this world, it becomes an impetus for remembering and increasing our love for Krishna. That's what these descriptions are meant for. So I was going to read a little bit here from the process of devotional service. And this is dealing with actually the opulences and sweetness of Krishna. So the vibration of Krishna's flute is very aggressive and it breaks the vows of all chaste women. Indeed, its vibration takes them forcibly from the laps of their husbands. The vibration of his flute attracts even the goddess of fortune in the Vaikuntha planets, to say nothing of the poor damsels of Vrindavan. The vibration of his flute slackens the knots of their clothing, even in front of the eyes of their husbands. Thus, the gopis are forced to abandon their household duties and come before Lord Krishna. In this way, all social etiquette, shame, and fear are vanquished. The vibration of his flute causes all women to dance. The vibration of his flute is just like a bird that creates a nest within the ears of the gopis and always remains prominent there, not allowing any other sound to enter their ears. Indeed, the gopis cannot hear anything else, nor are they able to concentrate on anything else. Not even to give a suitable reply. Such are the effects of the vibration of Lord Krishna's flute. Resuming his external consciousness, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, I have not spoken of what I intended. Lord Krishna is very merciful to you because by bewildering my mind, he has revealed his personal opulence and sweetness. He has caused you to hear all these things from me for your understanding. Since I have become like a madman, I am saying one thing instead of another. This is because I am being carried away by the waves of the nectarian ocean of Lord Krishna's transcendental sweetness. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then remained silent for a moment. Finally adjusting things within his mind, he again spoke to Sanatana Goswami. If anyone gets an opportunity to hear about the sweetness of Krishna in this chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he will certainly be eligible to float in the transcendentally blissful ocean of love of God. Oh, my friend, What severe austerities have the gopis performed to drink his transcendental beauty and sweetness through their eyes in complete fulfillment? Thus, they glorify their births, bodies, and minds. The sweetness of Krishna's beauty enjoyed by the gopis is unparalleled. Nothing is equal to or greater than such ecstatic sweetness. Even the predominating deities of the Vaikuntha planets, the Narayans, do not possess such sweetness. Indeed, none of the incarnations of Krishna up to Narayan possess such transcendental beauty. The vivid evidence of this, in this regard, is that the dearmost consort of Narayan, the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by all chaste women, gave up everything in her desire to enjoy Krishna, being captivated by his unparalleled sweetness. Thus, she took a great vow and underwent severe austerities. The quintessence of Krishna's sweet bodily luster is so perfect that there is no perfection above it. He is the immutable mind of all transcendental qualities. In his other manifestations and personal expansions, there is only a partial exhibition of such qualities. We understand all his personal expansions in this way. Okay, so I'm going to stop here. Thank you for sitting with me and reading a little bit tonight. They should open the curtain in just a few minutes.
Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare Krishna Hare 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 Hare. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Brahma, Brahma, Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Brahma, Brahma, Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Krishna Krishna Rama 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 Rama, 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 Rama. Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Jai Radhakrishna.